Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I am Tim. And we thank you for joining us every day here on American Family Radio, and especially on this program. Dr. Ray Pritchard is in studio with us today. Good morning, Ray.
Thank you, Tim. Good to be here.
Down from KCKS.
That's right.
KCKS. Ray's down with us today, and family, and got a meeting here at AFA
that's
today.
Right. And that's right. It's good to be. Always good to be here in Tupelo.
Now, you're going to be, you got any more Bible teaching to do at camps this summer?
Well, I'm just on the front end of that.
Oh, are you? Okay.
Yeah. Monday, going to be down at the Southern Baptist Pastors Conference right. in Dallas. And then in 2 weeks, going to be at Cannon Beach, Oregon, teaching the Bible there on the...
That's the one I want to go to.
That's right. Yeah. Hey, it's a tough job. Somebody's got to step up and take one for the team.
Hey, I love my home state of Mississippi, but in July, Oregon sounds like heaven to me.
I'll be, you know, the place we're staying... be about 100 yards from the Pacific Ocean.
Oh,
you can hear the waves coming in.
And the breeze.
The whole deal.
Now, are most of those folks who come to this camp, this is an annual camp there in Oregon.
Right.
Are they from Oregon or Washington? Or?
Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Northern California, most of them, yeah.
Yeah. So what are you going to be teaching on?
The conversations with Jesus. People who met Jesus...
Okay.
Who had, like Nicodemus and the woman at the well
right.
and the rich young ruler. I mean, if you just see how Jesus dealt with people, there's a whole lot to learn from conversations Jesus had.
That sounds like a book to me.
It does, doesn't it?
I'm
thinking about that.
Okay.
We'll see how it goes.
Okay. All right, if I want to go to that camp, seriously, we have listeners in that part of the country.
Absolutely.
How can we find out more about that?
Come to keepbelieving.com. And we've got the link right there to Cannon Beach Conference Center.
KeepBelieving.com. That's your ministry.
That's our ministry.
Website.
Right.
Fred Jackson is here. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning. Good to be here. I continue to be amazed
yeah.
at how Ray arranges conferences according to the weather.
Hey.
You know.
Well, to be honest, you got to have people come to the conferences, right?
Oh, yeah.
They care about the weather, too.
That's right.
But, January, do one in Florida.
That's exactly right.
That's a good one.
That's right. I do New York in July. Right?
New York in July.
That's right.
Oregon now
in late June, right.
May I use a grammatically incorrect expression? And that is this. Ray ain't dumb.
Okay. That's right.
He knows how the weather works.
That's right.
All right. So, Walker Wildman, speaking of weather, is doing a little family vacation this week, and so he's not with us, so it's my job to tell you, if you want to watch this show, you can go to Facebook and watch the show. Facebook live stream, we're live streaming there, the Today's Issues program. Today's Issues on Facebook or YouTube. Facebook or YouTube. YouTube, I guess you go to Today's Issues live stream and watch the show there. So we welcome you to take advantage of those two places, but Walker will be back in the office and in studio on Monday. Hey, and I do sincerely want to thank all of you who have sent emails, a lot of cards to me, some phone calls, telling me you were praying for me as I recover from my automobile accident, which was 2 weeks ago last night. And I want to thank you very much, sincerely, personally, on behalf of me and Allison for all of that. I was just kidding about the gift cards to Red Lobster and Cracker Barrel, but I did get my first Red Lobster.
Really?
Did you for real?
Yes, I did.
We had the best listeners in
right,
the world.
We do. And I wrote them a personal thank you note, and, I was just teasing about that. But I mean, if the Lord lays it on your heart.
That's right. If you have some extra ones sitting around.
But no, seriously, thank you. Everybody who called and all the cards and everything is very sweet and very nice and very thoughtful, and we appreciate it. Okay. So a lot to talk about on the program today. What's first, Fred?
There's just one more thing.
Okay.
I have to announce that Ray is branching out into new areas.
Uh-huh.
He's going to write a country and western song. And the title is, we already discussed this morning.
On the way in.
Yeah, on the way in.
Yeah, new country.
His wife dropped him off.
Okay.
And I said to him, where is your bicycle?
Right.
And he said, I left my bike in Kansas City.
Wow.
So we figured that.
There's a song. There's a,
there is right there.
I left my bike in Kansas City.
I left my bike in Kansas City. I think I can put together the tune for you.
I think we got a hit. We got a hit making right now.
I left my heart in San Francisco.
I left my bike in Kansas City.
We got it. You heard it first right here.
We're going right to the top, people.
Right. I think you're on to something, Fred.
I think we got it.
Songwriting's in your future.
That's right.
There you go.
All right.
On to the news of the day.
But as Alan Jackson would say, here in the real world.
In the real world. Okay. Here we go. Listen, I'm not going to talk about the Mueller investigation. I'm not going to talk about
please,
that.
Fred. We need our Mueller investigation fixed today.
No, we're moving on to a new chapter here. Within the next couple of weeks, we're going to get about a 500-page report from the Justice Department Inspector General, Michael Horowitz.
Yes.
And I think this is going to be much more interesting than all the gossip about the Mueller inquiry, because Michael Horowitz has been looking into how the Justice Department / FBI handled the Hillary Clinton email scandal. All right. Now, there is a kind of an abbreviated report that's making the rounds out there. And because Washington, D.C. these days is Leak City, little leaks are coming out as to what that summary report says from Michael Horowitz. One thing apparently that we're learning today is that the former FBI director, Jim Comey, he is being chastised for being insubordinate is the word that's being used.
Comey
is.
Wow.
Okay. And the reasoning behind that, according to reports, ABC News apparently has got some stuff on this, as well as the Associated Press. He was insubordinate in that he went against the wishes of the Attorney General in going out and making an announcement with regards to the first half of the investigation, which said Hillary Clinton did nothing wrong, but then coming back and saying, wait a minute, we're reopening this based on some things that we found on a laptop computer. So apparently the AG of the day, Loretta Lynch, was not aware of that, and Comey went out and made that announcement. But also Loretta Lynch is going to be mentioned prominently in this report as well, and that is because of her little visit with Bill Clinton on the tarmac there in Phoenix or Palm Springs, wherever that was, where they just talked about grandkids.
Right.
You know, there was nothing to do. But this was in the days just before the Comey report was supposed to come out. She's meeting with Bill Clinton when the investigation from Hillary Clinton is still ongoing.
Yeah.
And so she kind of compromised. It's also mentioned, of course, and James Comey has testified to this, that he was pressured by Loretta Lynch not to call it an investigation,
right,
but call it a matter, the Hillary Clinton matter. But this, as we say, we know it's about 500 pages long, so obviously there's a whole lot more in there. I think you're going to see names like Peter Strzok, the FBI agent who was put in charge of investigating Hillary Clinton. We know from the text messages that have been revealed already, he was a big fan of Hillary Clinton, but he was in charge of investigating her.
Yeah. If you're wondering who this report is from, it's called a Inspector General.
Mm.
It's like a it's an Inspector General. In other words, this is a gentleman whose job doesn't have to be a male, but whose job is to oversee the credibility and honesty and integrity of a particular agency. Okay? This is the way I understand it. It's sort of like an audit, if you will. In the financial world, it would be called an outsider independent audit. So you have this gentleman, and his job is to come in and see what are the facts of a situation. And it's his job to tell it like it is without respect to politics or people's feelings or personal relationships or anything like that. So he's supposed to issue an objective report with respect to this whole fiasco that was at the FBI and the Justice Department around Hillary Clinton and the investigation into her, you know, whether she, allowed classified information to be exposed, and what about her private server in her bathroom at her home that she used to do government business on. all those kinds of things. And so Fred's giving what is the preliminary reports on this investigation, on this
what the IG is supposed to do. He's supposed to look inside, and he's supposed to ask a question like this.
Yes.
Did you follow your own rules?
Good.
Did you do what you said you were going to do, or did you cheat?
Right.
Did you break your own rules?
Or were you pressured by somebody?
Were you pressured by somebody?
Right.
And if he truly has full access, I think we're going to discover this whole thing was rotten to the core.
Yes,
and a fiasco from the get-go.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing I think we're going to be waiting for, because the Hillary Clinton email investigation kind of bleeds over into the Mueller inquiry, because there was obviously DOJ involvement, FBI involvement, which led to this Mueller inquiry. And this all has to do with investigating Donald Trump, whether the Russians had infiltrated his campaign or he was talking to the Russians. But now what we're getting, and this is why the Michael Horowitz report, 500 pages long, I'm going to be anxious to see, because there are now rumors that the instructions about the FISA court stuff, all of that sort of thing, went beyond Comey, went beyond Loretta Lynch, the then Attorney General. There is word that it may have gone all the way to the Oval Office, and that President Barack Obama himself was the quarterback which led to the Mueller inquiry.
It's not even really credible, is it, Fred, to believe that the president, President Obama, knew nothing about all this? That's not credible, is it?
No.
He had to know.
Well, allegedly, if everything is squeaky clean,
right,
when the Justice Department is doing these kinds of things,
right,
he shouldn't know,
right,
because we're in the middle of an election campaign in 2016. And a president wouldn't want to be seen as interfering.
Putting his finger on the scale, so to speak. Yeah.
In my opinion, we can move on to the next topic. Where this whole thing went awry for James Comey, the Federal Bureau of Investigation. What was his proper title?
FBI director.
Where this all started going downhill for him is when he exonerated her.
Mm-hmm. Right.
After he indicted her.
Yes.
You remember that day?
Mm-hmm.
He was talking out of both sides of his mouth. And
I don't blame Hillary for being upset with Comey, because
James Comey was talking out of both sides of his mouth. He said she's guilty of sin, and then he said, but I'm not going to do anything about it.
Right.
Remember that day?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And he lost credibility with both sides.
Right.
That day. And it was almost like I expected him to break out in a smile, like, I don't even believe myself that day. Because you remember, what he did was, James Comey took it upon himself to change the standard of the law with respect to Hillary Clinton. And keep in mind, we don't want to bore you to death with these details, except to remember, folks, Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State of the United States of America. The third most powerful office in the world, arguably, at the time. And she had chose to do business on behalf of herself and her role as Secretary of State of our government. She wanted to avoid accountability, okay? And she wanted to avoid transparency. How do you do that? She decides, I'm going to set up my own internet server in my bathroom at my house so that I can't be tracked by the Congress. You see how this goes? This is well thought out.
Sure it is.
Well, this is well thought out. So her intent was to deceive and this is the way the Clintons have operated forever.
That's
on all kind of different things. So her intent was to not be held accountable. Because why? Because she's Queen Hillary.
Sure.
Okay. And I'm not going to answer these little peons down. I'll do my own. So that's why I want to hide what I'm doing.
Well, and it was going to work well, Tim, because she truly, quote, knew she was going to be elected in 2016.
Yes.
And then the whole thing would just
go away. Exactly. So here's where James Comey made his mistake, big mistake, when as FBI director, after having looked into this whole thing, the Hillary Clinton private server, he changed the standard. He said, I don't, basically, I'm paraphrasing, he said, I don't believe she intended to do anything wrong.
Yep.
Okay. Thus, he drew his own personal conclusion. I don't think that isn't his job as the FBI. Mr. Comey, may I say to you, the very act of having a private server to do state business on is in and of itself intent. Mm-hmm. It's an intent to deceive and to hide yourself from public scrutiny. All right? So when Mr. Comey goes, I don't believe Hillary really meant to do anything wrong here. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That's not your call.
Right. Right.
That's not your call. And that's
act on the evidence. Don't try to read her mind.
Yes. So what he was trying to do was protect her election chances.
That's right.
By letting her off the hook. And that's when he started getting in trouble with both sides. And then, of course, we know what happened to Huma. What's her last name?
Abedin.
She was the one that married to the
Anthony Weiner.
Pervert. What's his name?
Anthony Weiner,
former congressman.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a laptop that she uses. You can't make this stuff
right,
up.
Right, right.
He's sexting with some 16-year-old down in North Carolina or something. This guy's got real problems. Anyway, he's in jail now, isn't he?
That's right.
So Comey, they had to reopen the investigation. He had to say we had to reopen the investigation when they found that, you know, again, public information that belonged to the State Department was being exposed, pardon the pun, to the public by this
Anthony Weiner
fella. Anyway, there you go. But that James Comey's got James
mess.
Comey. It's a mess. James Comey's going to come out looking bad.
Mm-hmm.
All the way around in this whole deal, and I do think his original sin was to let her off the hook,
right,
when he knew she was guilty.
Yep.
And he played politics and he made a decision that day, and mm-hmm. it's come back to haunt him. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Next story, Fred.
All right, Alice Marie Johnson, an African American woman from Memphis, Tennessee. 20 years ago, she was convicted of a first-time nonviolent drug offense, sentenced to life in prison for that.
Wow.
First-time offense, nonviolent, the judge sent her to prison.
How could you get a life sentence?
Yeah, well,
I never heard of that.
That was the question that has been raised in a campaign that was really started just a few months ago by a fairly well-known celebrity named Kim Kardashian West. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Most people have seen her picture on the tabloids.
Married to Kanye West.
Right? That's right. So anyway, most people know by now, Kim Kardashian went to the White House just last week to make an appeal on behalf of Alice Marie Johnson. She apparently has been a model prisoner all these times. In fact, she got ordained as a pastor in prison over the last 20 years. But
she's been in prison 20 years?
20 years. She served 20 years.
And she did what now? She's convicted of what?
She was convicted. Basically, what she was doing was kind of arranging for drug dealers for, I think, things to be delivered.
Okay.
She didn't really trust.
But she got life.
She got life in prison, nonviolent, was never involved that way. Anyway, Kim Kardashian makes the appeal to President Donald Trump. And yesterday, President Trump announced the commuting of her sentence, and at 6 o'clock last evening, 6 o'clock Central Time, she was released to her family outside the prison in Alabama. I want you to listen to what she had to say upon her release last night to reporters.
I want to first of all thank my Lord and Savior.
Yes.
Thank God.
Jesus
thank
Christ.
God. Thank God.
Without Him, I can do nothing. But with him, I can do everything.
Yes.
I want to thank President Donald John Trump.
Woo!
Thank you.
I will not waste this second chance in life. I believe that God has given me this second chance so that others may one day have a second chance. So I have an obligation not only to my family who has waited all of these years for me, but an obligation to the people who have been left behind.
She has, we're told, been a model prisoner. The people who have been monitoring her, she couldn't be better. She's sorry for what she did. Again, the big question, why was she sentenced to life in prison on a first offense, nonviolence, that kind of thing? But there's a couple of things I just want to note. Some other media outlets, what's really interesting, They left out of their coverage of her release, Alice Marie Johnson's release last night, they left out the part of her praising President Trump and thanking him.
Who left it out?
Some of the media outlets. Oh. They just left that out.
Right.
They didn't want to be seen. You know, she's, as
you
I say,
to have her giving credit
to President Trump. Here's the other thing.
Is his name John?
Yeah, his second name.
Yeah.
Okay. I just know Donald J. Trump's Trump, all right. I've ever heard, but yep. That is John.
She wanted to make it very clear.
Yeah. Oh, she did. She thanked the Lord. Yeah. She did it in the right order.
She did it. Absolutely.
Excuse me, one question. How did Kim Kardashian come to champion this woman's cause?
I think Kardashian was on the internet one day and came across her story.
Story?
Yeah.
So then Kim Kardashian goes to the White House and appeals to the president.
Yeah.
Tells of this woman's story.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess she owes Kim Kardashian a pretty big
Absolutely. And it doesn't happen without
And she thanked her as well. And just to put the perspective on this, there is a movement within this White House. They want to start looking at justice reform. His son-in-law, the president's son-in-law, is big
Kushner.
On this. Kushner, because I think his dad spent a year in prison or something of that nature. So he has a heart for this kind of thing. So that's what led to this. But here's something else interesting about the media coverage. You know, if President Barack Obama was still in office and he did this, it'd be all praise.
Right.
It'd be all major headlines. Look how great the president is. But I want to read you a paragraph from the Associated Press news coverage of this event. Trump has been working outside the traditional pardon process, usually overseen by the Justice Department. No, he hasn't. This all went up the system. Right. And has appeared to favor cases that catch his attention because they've been championed by friends, celebrities, or conservative media, or involve people he sees as rivals. Trump has also been drawn to cases in which he believes prosecutors may have been motivated by politics, situations that may remind him of his own predicament at the center of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation into Russian election meddling.
Oh, brother.
This is not an editorial, folks.
Right.
This is included in the news story.
In the news story itself.
From the Associated Press.
Right.
Like they got in the president's head, and they understand his motivation. His motivation is really selfish. That's what they're trying to say here.
Mm-hmm.
And that he skirted the regulations in order to make this happen.
Well, first of all, the president's given wide discretion anyway, right?
Yes.
And look, presidents have issued pardons, right, forever,
mm-hmm. Yes.
And they do it for a wide variety of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
In this case,
yes.
It appears that the punishment given to this woman was very excessive. Life mm-hmm. sentence.
Yes.
Commutation is a just and good result, and good on Kim Kardashian and yeah. good on President Trump.
Yeah. So, and he's going to do more because
yes.
prison reform is one of his goals. Apparently, there are thousands of people that are in prison for first offenses, nonviolent offenses. And he wants to take a look at all of these. But you can, you know, the mainstream media, which normally is an advocate for prison reform,
right,
is going to attack him on every front.
Is that breaking news, Fred?
That's breaking news.
I had no idea.
The media hates Trump.
According to you heard it here first.
Heard it here first.
On yes. AFR.
According yes. to Fred Jackson. Breaking news here. Thank you, Wolf. You're going to hang around. We got Jan Markell coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Just a few minutes here on the program. Dr. Alex McFarland, is he going to be on? Alex is he's not committed to the show.
He's on the plane or something.
Oh, he's on an airplane.
Yeah.
Okay.
If he gets off in time, we're going to have him.
Okay. All right. We shall return momentarily with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. Stay with us.
I think I've got a stumper for you this week.
Trivia Friday. You know you laugh, and you know you always learn something.
What vegetable did an ancient Egyptian place his right hand when taking an oath?
That's funny now. But put yourself in my place.
That funny, Jim?
It is.
But listen to the question.
Trivia Friday. You'll want to tune in. 10 a.m. Central on American Family Radio.
Okay, here's the big question with regard to any big decision. Is this going to work? Well, if you've heard about MediShare, a brilliant way of sharing healthcare costs, you may have wondered that. Yeah, but does it actually work? So did Dr. Stuart Hoover, who initially joined to save a lot of money. The typical family saves about $500 a month. Stuart saved even more.
When we first joined MediShare, we were immediately going from a little over $1,600 a month down to $460 basically a month.
So that's wonderful, but then his wife needed emergency surgery. The bills added up to $160,000.
So we were seeing the bills coming in, and then the bills were being paid. Portions were being shared, and the end result of this is this bill was taken care of.
Yes, MediShare works, and it's so easy to get your questions answered. Why not? You can call right now. Just hit **345. That's **345, **345.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Liberty University is preparing students to enter a competitive job market. They have a low student-to-professor ratio, a caring Christian faculty, and more than 550 programs of study, ranging from undergraduate certificates to doctoral degrees. As the largest Christian university in the world, Liberty continues to establish itself as both a leading liberal arts university and an institution dedicated to the Christian faith. Learn more at liberty.edu. That's liberty.edu. The school district in Brownsburg, Indiana, has an 11-page transgender policy. One of the big rules, teachers must call transgender students by their preferred name and pronoun. But John Kluge, the high school's orchestra director, says that rule violates his deeply held religious beliefs. School administrators had agreed to a compromise, allowing him to address students by their last name. But in February, Mr. Kluge was told he would no longer be allowed to do that. And if he refused to address transgender kids by their preferred names, he would be fired. The 28-year-old school teacher faced a decision. Do you obey God or the government? Mr. Kluge chose to obey God and submitted his resignation papers. Some on the left have accused this good and decent teacher of intolerance. But let's be clear. The only people guilty of intolerance are the educators who threatened and bullied Mr. Kluge. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Dr. Alex McFarland will be with us in just a few minutes here on the program, as will Jan Markell momentarily from Olive Tree Ministries. I'm Tim Wildman. Ray Pritchard's in studio with us today. By us, I mean with yours truly and Fred Jackson. Hey, our 2019 tour of Israel is, we've announced the dates, and we've announced what kind of check you got to write to come with us. This is not a charity. The airlines, the hotels, the food people, the bus people, the tour guides, they all want to be paid. So you have to pay to go. But if you want to go with us to Israel in March of 2019, we'd love to have you. We've already got like 30-something people signed up. And we'll probably fill up in August, honestly. August, September. We did last year. It's amazing. The new attention, the new interest by Christians in America to want to go to Israel. I guess we're entering a time, mm-hmm. too, when people are, a lot of baby boomers are retiring. Mm-hmm. This is on a bucket list for a lot of folks. So anyway, we'd love to have you. I'm not going to go into all the details right now, just to say you can find out information two ways. Go to the website twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com. Everything is there that you need to know. But if you're the kind of person, you say, Tim, I like to hold a brochure in my hands and read about it. Well, we can do that too. Just call us at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, touch the number 5. Here at our office, the ladies say, punch 5. Don't they, Fred?
That's right.
In good Southern English, they say, punch 5.
Punch 5.
Punch 5, 800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, and then punch 5. and leave us your name and your address, and we'll mail you a brochure to your home. How about that?
I see the brochure says 9 days, the Holy Land.
Yeah.
I got excited. I thought that was Canada.
Oh, Canada.
That's
okay.
Right. From Nova Scotia to Vancouver.
I tell this story about once a year, but it's worth telling. My dad introduced me to leading tours to Israel because he did it in the 60s. He was one of the first to start doing it. He was a Methodist, just a local Methodist pastor, but twice a year he would get up groups to go to Israel. He'd take 25, 40, 50 people, you know, from all over. And my grandmother, my dad's mom, she's obviously been passed away for a long time now, but she loved to travel. She was very adventurous, very venturesome. But her husband, my dad's dad, was completely the opposite. When he would come visit us an hour away from his home, he'd visit with us for about an hour, his grandchildren, love on us, and then he'd want to get home to his little dogs.
Uh-huh.
Hey, got to get home. Sorry, got to get home to the dogs. Sorry, if it wasn't for the dogs, I'd stay here all day. Anyway, so he was kind of like that, my papa, I called him.
Uh-huh.
So every year, my dad would ask, he knew the answer before he asked, but he would ask his dad, Dad, do you want to go with me to Israel this year? And he would always have some excuse, you know, why he couldn't go or didn't want to go. And he finally said, Don, that's my dad's name, Don, I'm just going to tell you, the Holy Land, Tippah County. Tippah County's Holy Land to me. Okay, so let's just quit asking me every year if I want to go all the way across the other side of the world. I will read about the Bible and imagine it in my mind, but this soil I'm standing on right here is my Holy Land. Anyway,
that's beautiful. That is beautiful.
But you know, you do have opposites in families,
sure,
in couples. Some are very adventurous. You know, one person may be very adventuresome. And the other person is a homebody.
Just let me know how it goes.
Yeah, exactly. Is a homebody.
Beulah Land.
Beulah Land. All right, what do you got, Fred? We got Jan?
Jan.
Okay. Jan Markell is with us. Jan joins us from Holy Land of Minnesota. Jan is president and founder of Olive Tree Ministries. And her organization pays special attention to what's happening in Israel, mm-hmm, and the Middle East, and a lot of it as it relates to obviously current events and Bible prophecy and things of that nature. And Jan joins us most Thursdays. Good morning, Jan.
Well, thank you for having me.
How are you doing today?
Oh, well, we finally have summer up here. You know, it takes about 9 months, but we get it eventually.
Yeah. Hey, I've been on the St. Croix River in September.
Yeah.
And that's about 50 miles from you, I guess, but that's a river between Minnesota and
St. Paul
and Wisconsin. Doesn't that create the border there between?
I think it does.
If it doesn't create the border, it's right on the border of Wisconsin and Minnesota. Anyway, we went in late September, and it was absolutely spectacular.
I bet.
Just beautiful.
Our falls are very beautiful. Yeah. The winters aren't so hot, but the fall is lovely.
Yeah.
Like winter's not so hot. That's like that
pun there. All right, Fred, give Jan a hard question.
All right, tough question, not really. Prime Minister Netanyahu is in London today and speaking to a group there. And he was questioned by some in the audience today about why is it that Israel uses lethal force against Hamas when they're being attacked by Hamas
terrorists.
Who
asked him that?
Some of the people at this particular convention he was attending, I think it's hosted by Policy Exchange in London, England. Anyway, he says, you know, the Prime Minister Netanyahu said, you know, we don't want to use lethal force. But then he said something interesting. He said, but Hamas wants us to use lethal force. Now, think about that for a second.
Yeah.
Israel says, we don't want to kill people, but Hamas, as they up the violence and their attacks against Israel, it's because they want us, Israel, to kill Hamas. Explain what he meant by that, Jan.
Yeah, it's really a profound story and a profound statement. And it shows the terrible position Israel is in because Hamas, the Palestinian Authority, so many of these Islamic groups, life to them means nothing. Israel, of course, is Western society that value, in particular, the Jewish people value life. But when the terrorists within Hamas and those that they're sending to conflict on the border, that being Hamas sending people into conflict on the border, again, they do not care about the loss of life. They sent a few-month-old baby in jeopardy, and I think the baby was killed. The baby was ill to begin with. But again, that just shows you the mindset. And this is who Israel is to make peace with. I mean, give me a break. How do you make peace with the new barbarians? You cannot make peace with them. And my hunch is there's going to be a peace kind of treaty or peace talks here on the table in June sometime by the Trump administration. And my understanding is the Trump administration has taken into account the fact that Israel doesn't have a peace partner. And it's going to be reflected in what's being asked of the Palestinians. There's no way they'll go along with it. Therefore, there's no way there'll be an agreement.
Do you think there's an adjustment? And I want to get your reaction also. Last night at the White House, unlike last year, President Trump hosted a Ramadan dinner.
Yeah.
So do you regard that as some kind of an adjustment that he's making as far as the relationship with the Muslim world?
Well, Fred, I was quite surprised by that. I mean, I guess if we're going to honor or recognize various cultures, you need to do these kinds of things. Who knows what's in the mind of the planners and the coordinators and the orchestrators of all things the Trump policy? I think it's probably an okay thing to do, but I was quite surprised by it. I really was. I think. I'm not sure what's in the minds and what they think they're accomplishing. It probably can't harm our relations with the Islamic world. It can only do some good.
And, Fred, I believe you mentioned that there was actually a demonstration by other Muslims against this.
Yes.
So President Trump, and I think, Jan, you're right, there really can't be any objection to having to having a dinner with people who appear to be friendly and peaceful and to honor their culture and so on. It is telling that CARE found this to be objectionable, thus showing their true colors.
Yeah.
Yes, I think that's extremely true. I mean, look at the awkward position a president of the United States is in. How many cultures are there in America that we really have to somehow recognize? Probably 100 different cultures when you think of all those who have immigrated to this great country. So he's in. What if he tried to honor every one of those cultures? I know it's really a tough call on the part of the administration to know where to draw the line. And obviously, this is a tough call. And again, as Fred highlighted, I was caught off guard. I really was. Yeah.
Yeah. It was just announced late yesterday afternoon before I left the office. It came as a shock to me that there was a Ramadan dinner planned for last night. But the reality is, Jan, and to get your comment on this. Sometimes people in the media are guilty of painting all Muslims as being violent,
right,
as being, you know, potential terrorists. But here in this country, and there's a medical doctor, I think, out of Arizona who's a Muslim, and Fox News has him on quite a bit.
Yeah, Zudi Jasser.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And he represents to me maybe even the majority of Muslims. You know, they're not interested in terrorism. They're not interested
right.
in going, blowing up cars and attacking Israel. But they sometimes unjustly get kind of lumped in with
right.
the terrorists. And I think we as Christians have got to be honest, because part of our goal ought to be as a Christian community is to reach out to the Muslim community, which we are told more and more is interested in what we have to say about Jesus Christ and salvation.
Well, the difference.
Yes.
The difference at this point.
I think you gentlemen know I live in an area. Sometimes it's called Little Mogadishu. I mean, we have so many Somalis here.
Yes.
I think it's well over 100,000, and maybe between 1 and 200,000. So it is a challenge, and I'll tell you, it's a challenge for the church as well. because the church would really love to reach out to some of these, and I think they are in some kind of an effort reach. Sometimes the Muslim community doesn't reach back, so therefore, you know, it's a difficult situation at best. But as we've been hearing stories around the world, Muslims are coming to faith through various supernatural happenings, and I'm told that these are legitimate happenings, be they dreams or whatever. So you're right. I think the bottom line is we can't be closed-minded to the church reaching out at such a time as this.
All right, Jan Markell of Olive Tree Ministries, you've got a program on American Family Radio each weekend. What's coming up this weekend?
Yeah, we're Saturdays at 1 and Sundays at noon Central Time. I've got Amir Sarfati. He's one of my conference speakers this fall, a favorite guest, a favorite speaker. He's an Israeli, and he's got insights like nobody else, so hope folks can tune in.
All right, Jan Markell, thank you so much. We'll talk to you again next
week,
Lord
willing. Thanks
for
having me.
All right, take
bye.
Care. All right, moving on in our program, and we want to welcome right now Dr. Alex McFarland. Most of us around here, American Family Radio, and our listeners certainly know Dr. Alex. He was hosting Brian Fisher's show, Focal Point, for a few days this week, but now I think he's back home. Is that where you are, back home there, Dr. Alex?
I am back in the Carolinas, coming to you from the campus of North Greenville University, where I landed, drove to campus, booted up the radio gear just a minute ago.
You are a man who gets around. I tell you what, we wanted to talk to you a little bit about the Southern Baptist Convention. They get their annual meeting underway next week. And, you know, sometimes the Southern Baptist Convention kind of goes by. It's a bit of a yawner. Everybody gets together and they have a good time. Not this year. We're going into the Southern Baptist Convention with a lot of tension.
Well, you know, there's on the table of discussion the treatment of one of the great Southern Baptist leaders of the last 50 years, Dr. Paige Patterson, but even more than that is really the theological and philosophical direction of the ministry. And, you know, Fred, for even those that aren't Baptists listening to the program, anybody that's a Christian should really care about this. And I want to ask everybody listening to pray for the Southern Baptists, because they do represent the largest Protestant denomination in America, depending on the numbers, anywhere from, you know, 18 to 20, maybe 24 million people. They do tons of mission work, tons of benevolent work. But in the last, you know, decade, there's been some static and some challenges. And I think I can speak to this a little bit because, you know, by God's grace, I travel quite a bit. And I'm in, I don't know, 175, 185 cities a year. Easily 50% of all the churches I'm in to teach apologetics are Southern Baptist churches. And I've counseled with, I don't know, probably 4 or 5 dozen churches over the last decade that have been in dire straits. And anyway, we can talk about that because the election of their leaders really will shape and flavor the direction, the leadership of the denomination for good or for ill. And the deposing of Paige Patterson from Southwestern Seminary, I personally think, and I've talked to a lot of people who are very much in the know, it's no accident that he has been dismissed from Southwestern at this time, I believe on fallacious grounds, and it's part of a larger attempt to steer the direction of the denomination in ways that I personally and professionally pray that it doesn't go.
Alex, to go to that point, obviously, even Paige Patterson was involved in the conservative resurgence 35, 40 years ago, and it was pretty clear what the issues were back then, the inerrancy of the Bible versus those who believe the Bible is not inerrant and possibly contains mistakes and so on. What are the key theological issues at stake here in 2018?
Well, God bless you. Thanks for asking that. And by the way, when I guest host Focal Point today from 1 to 3 Central Time, 2 to 4 Eastern Time, I'm going to have on Dr. Ken Hemphill, who is running for the presidency of the Southern Baptist Convention. So if you want to hear, you know, from a longtime Southern Baptist leader who may wind up being the president, tune into Focal Point later today. But Paige Patterson, Let me just say this. I'm from the South, and we were always taught to respect our elders. Paige Patterson has committed no crime. He was accused of some ministerial advice given more than 20 years ago that some, I believe, looking at the past that was not documented, it was all speculation, and speculation interpreted through the lens of 21st century multiculturalism, pluralism, and the man over the last month has been treated like a convicted criminal for hearsay speculation. And when the trustees of Southwestern dismissed Paige Patterson from his presidency, he was not even given not only academic and legal due process, not even biblical due process, to give a chance to give his side of the story. And so there are a lot of people, myself included, that have been very concerned about this. But just as, you know, almost 40 years ago, people like Adrian Rogers and Dr. Patterson and others stood up for the inerrancy of Scripture, that the Bible is the Word of God, today, some of the theological issues on the table would be homosexuality, homosexuals as leaders, the role of women in ministry. But one of the ones, and I want to say this, I'm only speaking for Alex McFarland here. I'm not speaking for anybody but myself here, but I am speaking as a guy that has been in more than 2,200 churches to speak of all denominations throughout all 50 states and internationally. And I have organized some mission work, and I know a little bit about how church works, how missions work. One of the things that has been very problematic in the lives of Southern Baptist churches and a lot of American Christendom has been a militant Calvinism. Now, I'm not saying that the people that are Calvinist, Reformed, don't love Jesus. I know they do. I've booked many people that are Reformed to speak at our conferences that we do. But here's the thing. There's a hyper-Calvinism that's really a determinism that says humans don't have free will. Some are elected to go to hell. There's this double predestination. And the Calvinism of many of these guys that are, you know, say 40 and younger, and I know they mean well, but there are, without going into too many details, although we can if you want to, there are forces afoot to take the SBC to places that I know I will be on record June 7th, 2018, if the SBC continues to go down the road of hyper-Calvinism and some of the places it's going that a lot of the you know, people think they have an opportunity to commandeer this denomination, the very same people that have worked so hard to see that Paige Patterson doesn't preach at the convention and that he's not at Southwestern, hey, give it 5, 10, 15 years, that denomination will be as dead as the PCUSA has been getting over the last 40 years. Many of the, like, United Methodists. There was a book several years ago by John Warwick Montgomery called The Suicide of Liberal Theology. And if you want to kill the initiative for missions, if you want to kill a lot of the vitality of the local church, take it down the road of a philosophy rather than biblical truth. And I'll quote Kenneth Keithley of Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, very respected scholar. He says, Calvinism, and this is a quote, is a philosophy, not a hermeneutically defensible position. Now, I know there are probably some people listening that would just as soon throw me under a bus for what I'm saying, but Calvinism, ultimately, it doesn't breathe life and vitality and evangelism and the Great Commission into churches and organizations. At best, they plateau and generally decline.
Well, let me just say this. You know, we have listeners of all kinds out there. One of my dad's dear friends was Dr. D. James Kennedy.
Sure.
Who was a Presbyterian minister.
And very evangelistic, by the way.
And was probably a five-point Calvinist. Isn't that what?
Yeah, but he was an anomaly. He really was. He invented the wonderful program Evangelism Explosion. But he really was an anomaly.
Yeah, but I'm just saying to you, you can't throw an anomaly, yes, maybe, but you can't throw... You can't put everybody in the same, you know, just because they go to a particular kind of church does not mean that they subscribe to. We're getting deep here.
Yeah, I know.
Probably need to stop right here.
Sure.
But I understand. Well, listen, Alex, have a great trip out to. You're going out there?
Yes.
Okay.
Next week.
All right. Have a great trip out there, brother. And God bless you. And thanks for being on with us.
God bless you all. Thanks.
Okay. Yeah.
We will have people reporting from there because we haven't sent somebody to the Southern Baptist Convention annual meeting before.
They haven't made a lot of news in a few years.
Yes.
But there's going to be news out of Dallas
yes.
next week.
And we'll be covering it.
You know, you're not going to be able to solve the differences that some Christians have, or brothers and sisters have, with each other over such things as predestination, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some believe in that, subscribe in that,
mm-hmm.
and they'll cite verses, and then others say no. Mm-hmm. You know, and you're not going to be able to solve that. And we have listeners of all stripes here on this program. It's not our intention to divide the body of Christ because we have so much we agree on that we should be working together on. However, what I think we would all want to avoid is this, without getting into the specifics of things that I'm not qualified really to break down as much as you'd need to break down to talk about things in a deep theological way. But I would just say this: you don't ever want to get to a point in your Christianity where it becomes fatalistic, all right? Mm-hmm. That is to say, you get up every morning and you just say, like Doris Day, well, whatever will be, there's nothing I can do about it. Mm. That is not biblical Christianity.
Right, right.
Now, that is different than believing that God is sovereign and he is omnipotent and he is in control of everything under the sun.
Right.
Am I right about that, Ray?
You're exactly right.
Okay.
Right.
So I'm on.
You're on good grounds.
Okay, I'm on good grounds here. So, and I think what our brother Alex here was talking about, there are some who in the Christian community who almost are, as I say, I use the term fatalistic in their theology, and that they believe that there's nothing we can do.
Well, there
to
is
change
such
the
thing
world.
As hyper Calvinism. We're not going to get into the weeds
right.
on that. But you know, you have Mr. Spurgeon. Great Calvinist, maybe no greater preacher or soul winner among Baptists forever. So you can have a high view of the sovereignty of God.
I mentioned D. James Kennedy.
A great Presbyterian with a heart to reach people for Jesus Christ.
Right.
We want to hold to a high view of God, and we want to continue to reach the world for Christ. Right?
Right. Amen. I think we can all agree on that.
Right?
Amen.
Can't we?
Amen.
Let's hold hands now, can we?
It's like kumbaya.
Okay. I think we all know kumbaya.
No, he's busy writing his song about I left my bike in Kansas.
Left my heart
Don't
in
get
San
him confused.
Francisco, left my bike in Kansas yeah. City. Coming out next week.
I really haven't sung Kumbaya since youth camp. Huh? We used to do that in Methodist summer.
Sit around the fire camp.
Really did. Honest to goodness. Right. That would be one of our favorite songs, Kumbaya. All right. I don't know what language was that anyway.
Something African is something.
African, sort of African. We'll be back in five.
Supposedly.
We'll be back in 5 minutes.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.